Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 102 for December 31st, 2009. Jython. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, Libre, and open source software with Mr. Randall Schwartz, our host. Randall is the author of Learning Perl, Programming Perl, worked on Programming Perl, I don't know, a dozen or so great books. He's a programmer, an open source advocate, and a great guy to know and party with. Mr. Randall Schwartz, a good day to you. Happy New Year, sir.
Hey, almost Happy New Year. It'd be tomorrow as most of the people listen to this, but yeah, maybe it is. Maybe they got it late and they're just, it's now
it could be, we could be, this could be, we could already be in 2010 and not even
we could be in 2011 because people could like save this for a year and then come back and listen to it later.
For all we know, it's going out in space and aliens will hear this in the year 3000 and say,
I'd be very confused about it.
Skip the earth. There's no intelligent life there. That's for sure. Actually, today we're going to talk about Jython. What is Jython?
Jython, also originally known as JPython, is the Python implementation in Java that runs on the Java VM. So you can run Jython applications right alongside Java applications running everywhere that Java runs, like in a browser or on a web server or a standalone command line program, portable all platforms, obviously, because like I have Java running on my OS X box, and you have it running on Linux, and somebody else has it running on Windows, you could actually take a Jython program and run it through the Jython compiler and have a portable Python program that people would never know actually started as Python.
Well, excellent. Frank Wierzbicki will join us. He's the lead, current lead on Jython.
I'm glad you pronounced that and not me.
And I probably I mangled it, but we'll ask Frank when he joins us in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
But before we do that, anything you want to update our audience on?
Well, first, you know, I really, again, want to thank Mark Hartwell for, at the last minute, arranging for a place for me to tape last week's show. I had a great time hanging out with his parents, and even after the show was over, I got to chat with him for a while and got to show them a little bit about what I do and stuff, and got to talk to Mark Hartwell's daughter on the phone, which was sort of strange. But anyway, I'm not going anywhere creepy with that. But anyway, so I just want to thank Mark Hartwell again. And I hope that those of you that were listening last week's show, when we talked about Mark, I hope you subscribe to the world's shortest podcast, because I have been having a blast listening to those. You know, they're only like 90 seconds a day. You know, compare that to Daily Gizwiz, where you're tied up for 20 or 30 minutes a day. To just have that kind of humor condensed into 90 seconds.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I don't think I could take it. It would be too potent to brew.
I can't even listen to them at 2x on my iPhone the way I normally do. Because they just go by. They're so fast.
Too fast.
They're just gone. There's the guy going, and it's done. So, again, I just wanted to thank Mark Hartwell. And everybody, I really suggest everyone subscribe at hartwell.posterous.com. To the world's shortest podcast. It is hilarious. He's definitely a talented guy.
Yeah, we played a few of them on the show the other day. And it was just fun. Yeah, he's great. Yeah,
it's great. Also, just recently, I frequently mentioned my use of OpenBSD on this show for my servers and the fact that I sort of prefer BSD over Linux for my operating systems. And as a result of that, the producer... Oh, I don't have his name in front of me. Oh, that's how bad my notes are. But the producer of the BSD Talk podcast, who does a somewhat regular interview with people who happen to mention BSD somewhere, interviewed me just yesterday and published the show last night as we're speaking, but a week ago as most of you are listening to it. And that's available at bsdtalk.blogspot.com. So it's a short interview. But the great thing is I get to talk about my use of BSD all the way back to, and I didn't remember this till I got interviewed, but I use 2.8 BSD on a DEC, a PDP 1170 back in 1981. So I do have a huge history of BSDs all the way back to 1981. And I used a 2.8 BSD on the PDP 1170. I used a 4.0 and then 4.1 and 4.2 BSD on the VAX 11780 that our department had at Tektronix. And then I was a Sunos administrator for a number of years when I wrote the first programming Perl book. I was in that period of time. So I really have a history of BSDs all the way back to the very early beginnings of them.
Yeah, well, it's the original Unix, isn't it? Or not the original, but it's certainly the original free Unix.
It was the Unix that actually made TCP/IP possible, though.
Right.
I mean, that was the whole reason it existed. Is the DoD contracted with the guys at Berkeley to create the IP stack so that we could have our current internet. So cool. Really, you know, when you're running BSD style Unixes, you're actually tying yourself all the way back to the creation of the internet, the birth of the internet. So it's really sort of fun to play that way. So that was a lot of fun. Oh, I also got to talk about the BSD Fund card we just released. So I'll put on my Linux Fund hat for a second. We just released the BSD version of that card. So you can go to linuxfund.org or bsdfund.org and get yourself an Affinity credit card that every time you use it, it doesn't cost you any more money, doesn't cost the vendor any money, but the credit card company sets aside a tiny bit of your purchase to help fund projects. And if you didn't want to carry it because it's got a penguin on it, you can now carry it because BSD is on it. It's a really cool looking card. So we did all that. So that was very cool. So I appreciate that. BSDtalk.blogspot.com. Check out my interview there. Again, it's only about 20 minutes. It's a short thing. If you only want to take me in small doses, that's where to go.
Not the shortest podcast in the world, but one of the shortest podcasts.
Yeah, I didn't talk
about it. Not a minute, but it's
close. Didn't ask me a lot of questions. So yeah. It's good. Hey, and I also want to say thank you to the people that, this is not directly related to this show, but we did bring it up in one of the shows, is that this whole Australia thing for censorship has just gone nuts. We did that show on the firewall bypassing software that I wasn't supposed to say it like that, but you know what I mean, the web proxy thing. But on that show we were kind of waffling back and forth about whether Australia would do something. It sounds like they're in real bad.
They're very close to doing it.
Yeah, it's just, oh man, I can't believe in this day and age that a Western civilization wants to act like a firewall country. That's just crazy.
It is possible to opt out, but you have to opt out. It's not opt in, it's opt out. And we've talked about it on Twit and quite a bit. And in fact, Johnny Worthington joined us from Brisbane to talk about it. And it's just shocking. And the same thing is happening all over the world now. Just too bad.
So I don't want to cover too much in Floss Week because it's not directly related to open source, but I just wanted to say that the people that are writing me, thank you. Yes, I know about it, and it's not really a topic for this show, but it sounds like, Leo, you've got some of the shows that
people can cover listen. It.
All right, good. All right, good.
Yeah. Hey, before we get to our great guest, we're going to talk about Jython in just a bit with Frank Wierzbicki. I do want to mention our friends at Ford and the Ford Sync. We're getting ready to go down to CES where Ford's got some big announcements on Ford Sync. I don't know what they are, but I'm hearing from a lot of sources that there is something in the works. Let me tell you, Ford Sync is amazing. And I just want to salute Ford's commitment to making this simply the best computer system in a car ever. Computer system in a car, you might say, well, we're not talking about the engine computer. We're not talking about ignition ratios here or fuel ratios. We're talking about a computer for your enjoyment. And you might say, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to sit with a keyboard, a mouse, and a monitor and try to drive too. And that's the beauty of Ford Sync. It's completely voice controlled, completely audio response. It's like HAL 9000 in your car, only without the whole locking you out of the space station and, throwing away the key thing. No reading your lips or anything, but it does understand you. Ford Sync is the hands-free calling, the music search, the turn-by-turn navigation available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. We're going to be driving a Ford Lincoln MKS down to Vegas, and streaming from it, you'll get a real interesting look at Ford Sync in action. You can find out more about Ford Sync at their website, syncmyridepodcast.com. Take a look at the 911 assist, which is a great safety feature. Actually, the whole thing in some ways is a safety feature because your hands never leave the steering wheel. Your eyes never leave the road. But everything you need is available with a push of a button on a steering wheel. You could tell the car what temperature, what music to play by song name, by artist name, by genre. You could tell it what you ask it for information. You could say, read me the New York Times. Read me that SMS that just came in on compatible phones. You could say, give me the sports scores, the five-day forecast, ski conditions. It's just incredible, and it's getting better all the time. Every Ford Sync vehicle has a USB port, so it works with your Zune, your iPod, many USB devices, your Droid. It's just in Bluetooth audio, too. So when I get in the car with my iPhone 3GS, it starts playing the music that I've been listening to, that I left off at, right in the car. I think Ford Sync is, simply put, the best entertainment system ever put in a car, and I want you to take a look. Go to your local Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer, say, I want to test drive Sync, or visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com and watch for some very interesting open source and SDK announcements coming from Ford very soon. All right, Randall, let's get to the Skype, shall we? So we have Frank on the line. Where are you, Frank? I don't know where you are. Your picture is coming to us so clearly. You could be anywhere.
I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
There you go. The Research Triangle.
That's right.
Is Jython a full-time gig for you?
It was up until recently. I was working at Sun Microsystems on Jython full-time for about the last 2 years, but that came to an end recently.
With the Oracle acquisition?
I think it's probably related to that. It's basically Sun's... having some financial difficulties, and I think it's very difficult to draw a dotted line between someone working on Jython full-time and profit. Right. So I did not make it through the last round.
Step one, Jython. Step two, I don't know. Step three, profit.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So it was my sense as a Python user that Jython came along very early. Python's written in C. And was Jython the first non-C version of Python?
I believe it was.
Tell us how it differs from Python.
Well, it's written in Java, of course. It integrates very well with Java. It has a few design decisions based on being on the JVM environment. So, for example, CPython has a reference counting style garbage collector. Whereas on the JVM. The JVM has this great, much more sophisticated garbage collector that does a great job at, for example, if you have one of the places where Jython can actually outperform CPython, and just for your listeners, when we're differentiating between Jython and the first implementation of Python written in C, we call it CPython. So one of the places where Jython can perform better than CPython is when you make lots and lots and lots of tiny little short-lived objects that come to life and then are collected very quickly. The garbage collector on the JVM is much better at cleaning those things up quickly and efficiently.
That's for the programmer. Really big... The programmer doesn't have to pay any attention to that.
Well, you don't really have to pay attention in Python either unless you're writing stuff in C.
Right.
The garbage collection is still outside of your concern, but it performs better on the JVM.
Right.
Does CPython use reference counting like Perl does and have that same problem of having to specifically mark weak references?
Yes.
Okay, so JPython Jython wouldn't have that problem then, right?
No, it does not have that problem.
So it's actually, in some senses, you can write... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that the problem you get traded for is in CPython, when your file drops off the end, you kind of know right then the little things that happen, the little finalizers happen instantly. Mm-hmm. With the JVM, you don't have those guarantees. So it's still a trade-off, but now go ahead.
That was good. That is interesting then, because you're using a garbage collect, mark and sweep algorithm, whatever it is, to make sure there's no final references. You don't get your finalizers right at the right time. Now, is that, does that appear in actual code? Do people's code fail sometimes as you're porting it back and forth?
Yeah, if they're depending on that to close their files and they just don't bother cleaning it up at all, then they might not close their files. They could run out of file handles or something like that. They're opening an enormous number of files. Now, the newest version of Python, starting with Python 2.5, there's a with statement style of opening files where you mm-hmm. can. You can write your code in such a way that it'll get closed at the right time, and that's independent of the garbage collector. So that's kind of the encouraged way to write to open files these days, especially if you're worried about that sort of thing. as to use the with statement file opening convention.
So back in the history of Jython, and was it at one point, was it actually at one point called JPython? I see that in a couple of places. Is that just a misname that I saw in a couple of places?
No, it is. It was the original name of Jython was JPython. There was some sort of kerfluffle way back in Jython's history where the there was a company that was paying people to write JPython, and that ended the Jython moved to SourceForge, and it had to pick a new name because that company still held the trademark to JPython, and so and didn't want to let go of it. And I think there was some sort of negative feelings going on there at the time. So
Jython is the cool, clean name, and JPython is the old name.
And I think that's about the whole story.
Okay, cool. Okay, so when the original one was written, did we lose him? Is he still on? I can't hear anybody.
I will get him back.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, hey, hey.
Oh, yeah, he was sort of flaking out there for a second.
Yeah, it's not a great connection, unfortunately.
Hate that when that happens.
I hate it when that happens.
Mm-hmm. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Unable to connect.
Uh-oh. Let's see if he's still on Skype. Yep. He's still there from here.
Yeah, it's intermittent. I wonder if he's on Wi-Fi. We always try to get people to be wired.
Yep. I'm wired.
Well, it's because Wi-Fi, I think people don't know that when you're just surfing an email, you don't notice that Wi-Fi comes and goes. It's not a steady.
Mm-mm.
And you really do notice it on VoIP and anything that, you know, needs consistent. Yeah, it's not responding.
Uh-oh. This could be a short show. Well, that was our guest. What did you think of that? We'll have to call him. What's he? Are you still on? Are you still?
Meanwhile, we're talking about Forth for the Mac. I loved Forth so in the chat room. I loved Forth so much.
Yep.
And I still fantasize that somebody will write a Forth based OS that will give you full access to the vocab, so that. Yeah. Yeah, I have Starting Forth. In fact, that's one of the greatest computer books ever written. I'm looking
Leo at Brody, yeah.
I'll tell you. I'll show you. It's they're shelved together. I'll show you.
I'm not getting a response from him in the chat room. Yeah, his Skype is gone now, so we'll see if he comes back. Yeah, Forth was used as the boot ROMs.
This stack in my boot bookshelf or whatever it is. I don't know if you noticed this when you were here last, but this is one of my favorite stacks. So it's got Starting Forth, and it's got all my marginalia and notes in here, and this is just a really good book. My yellowed copy of Kernighan and Ritchie.
Yep.
And I mean yellowed, and also full of, you know, my notes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun. This one, you remember this one? The Elements of Program. This is Plauger and Ritchie.
Oh, yeah.
Or Kernighan and Plauger.
Kernighan and Plauger, yeah.
Exactly. Another Kernighan and Plauger. Software tools.
Yep, right. Is that the one that's in Pascal or the later one? The one in Fortran or Pascal? RAT 4?
This one's in...
it's RAT 4, right?
Yeah, I don't recognize it.
It's RAT 4.
It's in PL1.
No.
It's RAT 4. You're right. It's in RAT 4. You're right.
And the one in RAT 4 was much better than the one in Pascal because they had to make a bunch of
confessions. Yeah, this is in RAT 4 too. Oh my God, it's all in uppercase.
Yeah. I listed that language on my resume. I'm going to darn it. I'll keep mentioning it when I can.
It's short for Rational Fortran. I don't think anybody...
Frank's back on. He says he's trying to call.
Oh, I see him. I'll call him. I can't. Yep. And then the last one, the Mythical Man Month.
Right.
All right.
He's calling you.
Yeah, I tried to call back a few times. It was dead. I don't know if you lost your connection or...
I seem to have lost my connection for a minute, and it doesn't seem like that really ever happens, but of course now it
only
has to happen
during
today.
The show. Yes.
Apparently.
You're not on Comcast, are you?
I am on AT&T.
Okay, because Comcast has been going up and down in Petaluma today, like on, off, on, off, on, off all day. And I just wonder if there's some sort of maybe, I don't know. We are using a really good connection.
I bet.
called Ethernet. It's called Ethernet to the First Mile, EFM. And it's amazing. It's like it's a 9 megabit symmetric. It's like bonded T1s, but it's as reliable as T1s. It's really great. And so that's what we use for our Skype and for our streaming. So if you'll send me
about that.
No, that's quite all right. We'll pick up where we lost you. If you will send video.
You're on Wi-Fi?
You're not on Wi-Fi.
Oh,
right?
I'm sorry. I'm not sending video there.
There you go.
I'm not on Wi-Fi. I actually went out and bought a 50-foot cable.
Oh, you're kidding. Thank you.
So I could go upstairs. Connect upstairs.
We thank you profusely. It does make a big difference.
Yeah.
We had Kevin Marks on Twig on Saturday, and he said, no, Wi-Fi's fine. And, of course, he dropped out every 5 minutes. It was very hard.
Oh, no.
Very hard. All right. So
I have a question to pick up from where we were.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Pick up.
We're ready. Okay.
We're ready.
So when Jython was first created as JPython or whatever that initial process was it a subroutine for subroutine sort of translation from the original C code, or did you start from the grammar of Python and say what would be the best Java way to parse this and produce this, or maybe some combination techniques? What was the process there?
Well, I wasn't around for that. Jim Huguenin was the originator of Jython, and he actually worked side by side with Guido van Rossum at CERN, I think. Mm-hmm. And he actually built it kind of from the ground up. I think he pretty much focused on parser and compiler, and just getting the core language figured out as his first cut. And I think he hit a couple of very Java-centric kind of things, like I think he got applets working really quickly, and because this was, if I don't know if you know how old Jython is, but it's going on 11.
Wow.
So back 11 years ago, applets were going to take over the earth, and all internet stuff was going to go through applets. So he got some applets working very quickly, but I think it was more, I think it probably was just more, this is conjecture, but I think it started with grammar and language first. Through some of the old repository logs, I have a guess.
So somebody familiar with the layout of the internal CPython wouldn't necessarily have a leg up on somebody trying to help you guys with Jython, then. It's not really the same thing internally.
There's a lot of differences. But at the same time, we consult the CPython code fairly regularly. So for like tricky areas, like Python's import mechanism is very complicated and very peculiar in a lot of places. And we actually have almost line-for-line analogies to the internals of how import is done, to take one example. So you would, if you really, really know some really hairy part of CPython well at the code level, it would actually give you an advantage looking in Jython, and you would recognize things back and forth because we're not shy about looking at the C to get an idea as to what's going on.
So standard Python is basically an interpreter where I have Python sitting over there in the corner looking at a source text file or the Python compiled PYC files or whatever. And it's running the text essentially each time and has to remain there as an interpreter. Is Jython similar in that there's some sort of core interpreter that has to stick around because of eval statements or whatever the Python equivalent is? Or is it more of a compile pass through to create classes, sort of like you can't tell it's Python anymore kind of thing?
So everything that gets interpreted in Jython in its current form, and we've been talking about doing something different as well, but in its current form, everything gets compiled down to Java bytecodes before they get executed. That includes eval statements. So we're always creating some Java bytecodes, loading up through a class loader, and then running them from the JVM. At the same time, they're definitely peculiar sets of bytecodes that, if you look at the way the bytecodes look in Python, you can almost translate, four or five Java bytes to the one byte you would have needed in a PYC file. But again, it's always compiled to bytecodes for the short answer.
Does that mean that because of eval, though, that you would have to have all of the Jython to to bytecode compiler then at runtime. You'd still need it around.
Yeah. Yeah, you do need the you do need it at runtime. At least as long. Well, you don't need the source code though at runtime necessarily. You could get rid of the source code and still run off the bytecode, but not for not for eval.
It's just as Python works though. You get the intermediate code.
I think Python always goes to Python bytecode.
You have a PYC file.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you can then run without this original source. It also it also has tools for, you know, balling it up and so forth. I presume all the libraries are the same.
There are some subtle differences, but we use a lot of the Python, the .py files that come standard with Python unchanged. And we strive to, in fact, the upstream, the CPython guys are pretty good at accepting some small changes when we need them in order to run them unchanged on Jython. There's a few places where say, to take one example, the way that we do zip files, Java already has so much support for zip files that we actually just have a thin wrapper around the Java zip, whereas Python has a C program that does zip, and then we both share a kind of an outer wrapper that calls into the either the Java or the C.
Was the motivation for Jython originally just the being able to run as applets, or is it speed, or compilation, standaloneness? I mean, what really had people be this crazy to start with?
Well, it was one guy, and the story goes that someone told him it couldn't be done.
Ah, the ultimate motivation.
It would be too hard.
Yes.
Indeed. In fact, I think Guido expressed doubt that it could be done, and that might have been the thing that fired Jim Huguenin up to do it.
That's always a good way to do it. Okay, so it's not a tiny project anymore. There's you and a bunch of other people working on it, I presume?
That's right. There's a good 7 or 8 people that contribute, I think, at least over the last, last year, it's, I guess, around 7 or 8 people. And there are people that have their own sections. There's Alan Kennedy is kind of doing our socket stuff, and Jim Baker works on the Unicode stuff, and Charlie Groves works on our Java integration. There's a pretty good sized cast of people contributing. It's
Go ahead. I was just going to say that many people working on it. Uh-huh. I hate delays.
You first, Randall.
Okay, with that many people working on it, there must be a pretty big user base as well. And otherwise, that's hard to motivate 8 people working on something unless at least 15 people are actually using it. So, what are some of the places that the Jython is being used these days? And where's it in the community?
Well, I know it's used a lot in QA systems. There's this open source project called the Grinder that does load testing using Jython as its scripting, its script. There's of course some of the big ones, and this actually uses a very old version of Jython, but WebSphere and WebLogic use it as their admin scripting language. So that if you look at the job postings out there, and Jython scores very, very well for job postings compared to a lot of other, at least languages on the JVM other than Java, it's largely because of WebSphere and WebLogic jobs, because that's how they script their admin functions. And there's, I know of a few places where Pylons is being run in production on the JVM, because nowadays you can... I don't know how much Java you guys know, but WAR files are kind of the standard way to distribute Java applications. And now, with the work of the last year or so, we can throw Django and Pylons, which are two popular Python web frameworks, into a WAR file, throw it up on a Java app server, and if your ops people insist on running things on the JVM, and a lot of ops people do because they have lots of great tools that they're used to using, you can throw Python up into that environment and have happy ops people, or at least people that are none the wiser that they don't actually have Java in their environment.
Well, they do. It's indirectly. It's not just not Java. It's kind of Java because it's still Java bytecodes. But it is interesting then that you're actually able to take Python web apps and wrap them inside Jython and put them on, was it WebSphere, to be in other JVMs. What under Tomcat too, I presume?
Oh, yeah. They all have the same standard format. So anything that can act as a servlet and can go into a WAR file to use the Java vernacular can go on any of the app servers that exist. Tomcat, Jetty, WebSphere, WebLogic, GlassFish. They all take the same ball of code in the same way.
So are there any retail websites that we might be able to visit and crash that are running Jython?
I actually don't personally know which websites are running Jython. I know this from the Pylons guys and the Django guys that they in turn know people that are running Jython, but I don't know where those places are. I should find out. I should be able to answer this question.
We're starting to take pride in the fact that we have enough live listeners that we can actually take websites down. So I just wanted to do that.
Yeah,
today,
let's take a website down. Any website. Just pick one.
Just pick a random one. Everybody go to Jython.org. Let's see if that holds up.
No, that's terrible. You're terrible.
I think Jython.org will probably stand up to it.
It's been doing great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much pure. Well, it's almost pure text.
It's static.
And with some stuff. Yeah, it's static enough that I don't think you're too likely to bring it down.
Oh, well.
Don't take that as a challenge necessarily.
Oh, well.
So how does other than the fact that you're programming in Python if you prefer it, how does Jython compare to the other dynamic languages available on the JVM?
So for example, there's JRuby, Groovy, Scala, Clojure is another one. I think it compares pretty favorably. It runs reasonably fast. It runs similar in speed to CPython. So if you're asking why would you choose Jython over one of these other groups, I would say it's probably the Python language itself. Jython's a pretty covers most of what Python can do. It has most of the libraries. And if you like Python, but for some reason you need to run on the JVM, I mean, Jython would be the obvious choice. As far as, say, speed comparisons go, that one's a harder thing to say. I know the JRuby guys have done a great job of making their implementation very fast, but I think comparing JRuby to Jython, it's probably not that much faster than we are. I think JRuby is a lot faster than Ruby, at least the older Rubies. But Python's has had lots of work to get it to go reasonably fast, so it's a little harder for us to go faster than CPython. That's probably going to change because the JVM guys are giving us special hooks so that we can get some of the same benefits that the Java language has on the inlining and the speed ups that you can get that Java enjoys while it's in the JVM. Jython's going to get a lot of that too, a lot more of that. I mean, it already does because it's written in Java, but the actual we'll have hooks where we can say this code, we can define our methods in a way that the JVM understands. Right now, our methods are kind of god-awful large blobs of bytecodes because the JVM doesn't quite understand how to run a Python method.
So I'm curious about that. How close are the object model of Python to Java? As in, can I pass a Java object over to some native? Did I say it backwards? Can I pass a native Python object over to Java code and have it do the right thing when it calls methods against it, and vice versa? Can I take a native Java object and carried around inside my Python code, or are they opaque to each other?
So that's actually one of the big selling points of one of the reasons you'd use Jython. The one direction is very, very well, works very well. That is, Jython calling it a Java works extremely well. And since they're both object-oriented languages and they're both running on the JVM, it was a fairly easy mapping to... So you can take a Java library, pretend that it's Python, import it just like you would any other Python module, call the methods on it. And from the Python side, it's pretty much as if it was intended to be that way. You don't have to do the same things you do on CPython. You don't need to do swig or any of the other painful things that you have to do to call back and forth between C and Python. You don't have to write C extensions. You just write Java and you call it as if it was native. Now, the calling from Java into Python is a little bit more difficult. Right now, the best way to do that is to import a Java interface, and then when you get that, so, and that's another thing, you can also extend Java from Jython, from the Python code, you can extend Python objects, and you can extend Java interfaces. I'm sorry, I said Python objects. You can extend Java objects directly in Python. You can extend Java interfaces directly in your Python code. And when you do that, when it comes out back to the Java world, it'll still have that Java interface, and you can use it as if it was just another implementer of that Java interface.
Now, go ahead.
I'm just saying it's not as clean on the Java side. It's not just throw some Python over the wall and then let the Java code use it. You have to have some kind of, since Java's static, or at least feels more static than Python, you still need a list of methods to touch. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say the fact, though, that method parameters in Java would be typed. Does that get in the way sometimes? Is there some sort of adapter call that kind of coerces the whatever objects you have when you're passing, you know, you're passing three floats and it really expected three strings? Is there some sort of coercion that's happening automatically? Or do I need to make sure that if it's expecting three strings that I'm only passing it strings?
Well, you don't get the compiler warnings or anything like that that you would expect as a Java programmer. You have to know that you have the concept in Python duck typing, where you just send it the right message, and if it knows how to take that message, it'll accept it. You can treat Java in that manner. You just need to know what you can send to that object, and then it should just work. And there is, in fact, conversion going on. Python strings get turned into Java strings first as you call into the Java. If it's expecting an integer, it'll coerce your Python numbers into integers or floats or whatever it expected on the other side. And there's proxy generation going on when you do these calls into Java. It is more complicated on the inside, but to the programmer, it feels like they're just calling it as if it was a native Python object.
Oh, that's good. So I can use some flexibility in this. I can sort it, like you were saying earlier, I can kind of treat it like Python and it'll just work.
That's generally what happens, and we don't get too many complaints on that side of the calling. We do get complaints from people who want to pass their Python into Java and don't like how tricky it is to get the Java to call back into Python. Hmm. And we're working on that, but that's...
And how would this compare to projects like IronPython, which is putting, I think, Python on .NET? Are you sharing any ideas and thoughts with them, or is it completely a separate, unrelated effort? Does it relate?
We talk all the time, actually. They're great guys. And I don't know if you know this, but the IronPython inventor is actually the same guy as the Jython inventor. That's also Jim Huguenin. Also, someone thought that it was a terrible idea to try to run Python on the CLR. And also, he just said, okay, I'll try it. And
This guy doesn't take challenges well, or maybe he takes them too well. Maybe that's the problem. Yeah. It's like you could. I want to challenge him to come up with Perl on the CLR. Then let's go. Let's just keep moving things around.
I wonder if he would take that. That's a tough one. I think Perl is quite a bit more difficult to implement than Python.
Or Python on the Squeak VM. That would be interesting because then you could run Python directly inside Smalltalk. That would be cool.
Yeah. I think someone's at least started that. I thought I'd heard of such a thing.
Yeah, since it's my best. Yeah, okay, well, that's cool.
I think you might be done with that. But the CLR team is a great bunch of guys, and we definitely we're trying to figure out. In fact, all of us, the CPython guys, IronPython guys, there's also the PyPy guys. They're writing Python and Python. We're all trying to
say what?
I don't think you can do that.
That's recursion. That's snake eating its own tail. I don't get that. How would you?
Yeah, and they're working on a new icon that I think is going to be like an Ouroboros, like a snake eating its own tail, or a python eating its own tail.
But you'd have to write like a little bit in C first and then compile from then on, right?
What they do is they write Python, then they write a Python in Python they write a translator that then translates that Python to C. It's very complicated.
That seems it's more an exercise, right? I mean, it's fun. It's not. There's no value in doing that. Maybe
actually,
is.
They're doing very well on speed, and they can trade out garbage collectors and object spaces and all this. It's a fairly insane project. I can't imagine who started it, but at this point, it's actually maturing. It's hitting a 1.0, and in a lot of places, they're actually managing to be faster than CPython.
Sounds like something that started with an icon and then went from there. It's like,
it could be.
I got a great idea for an icon.
I got this great idea. A snake eating its own tail. Now, how do I use this?
Absolutely.
Randall, what are they writing? They're writing Perl 6 in that intermediate language. What is that?
They're actually writing Perl 6 in itself. So it's not as crazy as
similar.
It sounds.
Yeah, it's similar. No, I remember my first C compiler, Whitesmith C, you compiled the compiler because you know you had to build it from scratch basically
right
I mean, that's fairly common but
GCC's
but what is that parrot. Intermediate
parrot
is there a parrot python
possible vms
there is
actually is yeah there's a
oh, go
there's
ahead
a
parrot, you would know better
parrots yeah there's a proof of concept parrot to say python to parrot translator. So it's not anywhere near a complete usable Python, but at least it's demonstrating that Parrot, as it exists, can support the kind of object styles that Python wants and not just the kind of object styles that Perl wants. And really, there's about 40 different languages that have proof of concept interpreters for a Parrot already. And it's all because we want to make sure that Parrot is the universal VM by the time we get there. So,
right.
Nice.
Hey, what about threading? Is Jython better at threading than CPython?
Well, we don't have a GIL. One of the things that people complain about on Python is there's this global interpreter lock. They call it the GIL, where every time you go into the interpreter with your code, when it travels through the interpreter, it pretty much gets locked down to a single thread for the duration that it's in the core interpreter, and then that's released at the as they exit the core interpreter. We don't have anything like that. We actually have it's fully threaded. So, in the end, what that means in practical in the real world is that if you're running a Python program for a long time on a machine that's got four CPUs, and these days it's getting close to the point where your telephone will probably have four CPUs, you would only use one of those four CPUs for one Python program, whereas Jython would actually have do a better job of spreading across the four CPUs for one program.
Got it. So it's more practical. Practically speaking, it's threaded.
Sure. Yeah. But there's the threading model is still the same. You still write the same. You still probably import threading the way that you would do from Python.
Right.
And the reverse side of it, the part where you'd get worried is you can depend on the GIL, and so you might not lock as much, and you're okay. And then you drop this program on Jython, and you might run into some threading issues because your locking wasn't good enough for a actually threaded program.
Is there emulation of OS level forking? Can you use the standard backticks and stuff? Actually, whatever Python uses, I don't know if it's still backticks, but is there an emulation of that that will work even from the JVM?
So the JVM has this new thing in JDK 7 called fork join that allows you to do that from within the JVM. And we don't support that yet, but it's definitely in Jython's future. Historically, the JVM doesn't like you doing things like that.
That's why I want to do it, because they can't.
right. Well, the JDK is getting better, and JDK 7 in particular has all sorts of goodies for for languages like Jython, hooks that we can use to make ourselves perform better, but also things like fork join, where we can get a little closer to touching some operating system stuff.
Now, did the JVM had to be JDK had to be migrated or evolved to be able to deal better with dynamic languages over time? Because we talked to the Java guys last year. Were you involved in some of those discussions while you were at Sun?
Yes, yes. In fact, I was working with the Hotspot guys. They were asking for pain points and things that they could do better. And I sat in on some of the JSR. Now I've forgotten that I used to know this name by heart, the number of the JSR. Anyway, it's Invoke Dynamic. If you Google Invoke Dynamic JSR, you'd find it. Anyway, that's the standard they're using to try to create a programming model for non-Java languages to be able to hook into the JVM. In particular, there's method handles, which if you're from a C background, it's a bit like function pointers. And currently, Java doesn't have anything like that you can grab onto. But come JDK 7, we'll have method handles, and we'll truly be able to define our methods in the way that the JVM will actually speak a language that we can actually define a method. Currently, what we do, it's horrible. We create a class, we create an object, we get a class loader every single time because it won't garbage collect unless it's got a class loader. So we have this big giant ball of muck that that goes along with our methods so that they can behave like Python methods, and you can, you know, stick them on, take them off, alter the function definition, things like that, things you can't really do to Java. So it hurts performance because we've got all this muck dragging around with the methods that we're passing around.
But as the JVM gets smarter, then you'll be able to get rid of some of that interpretation within interpretation layer and move forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to get much faster. And the great thing is so much work has been done on the JVM to make it perform. They've got such crazy, crazy optimizations inside that once we hook into that stuff, we might be able to, we will probably suddenly be better than faster than CPython in a lot of cases without any further effort on our part. And then just wait for the JVM to get better and we'll just get faster as the JVM gets faster.
How sensitive, now I'm going to speak out of my realm already with Java, but I know that Java is really good for sandboxed applications where you can turn off certain things that it can do around the edges, like maybe, you know, open a file outside a particular directory and things like that. How well is the Jython able to respect those boundaries, and or does it introduce potential leaks?
It's not going to, if you set those values up, so you can say things like this program, you can there's a declarative model for saying these are the things you can do, these are the places you can touch. Those things are actually enforced at the JVM level, so there really isn't any way for us to get around those if a JVM is started up with those security features enabled. There's some security features that would break Jython. For example, if you don't allow any other class loaders than the main class loader, we kind of need our class loaders. I think there are ways around that, but we haven't really looked into that hard enough lately to the class loader thing made it hard to do unsigned applets, and we used to be able to do unsigned applets, but I think we've drifted from some of those careful tiptoeing around the security models, and some of that stuff doesn't work as well as it did. But I guess what I'm saying is Jython can't go around the security models, but sometimes a tight security model can make Jython work a little more poorly. It can break.
Like completely Jython. Break.
Yeah, it can completely break it in some cases. Yeah, you could definitely secure things to a point where Jython just doesn't run.
Now, I've only touched briefly on this, but how incompatible is this? If I have a basic Python program and I can figure out how to do I/O using Java, can the most of the core of my algorithms and my libraries remain intact? Is it going to be close to the same implementation?
Yeah, if you write a pure Python program, and this wasn't as true a couple of years ago, there's been a lot of work that went into the latest release that makes it much more compatible with Python. So to go back, when I first started with Python, it was 2.1, and you would grab something cool off of the internet that was in Python, and you'd try to run it, it would fail like 90% of the time. Modern Python programs, even pure Python programs, would just not work. But nowadays, with the 2.5 release, and by the way, we our numbering matches the version of Python we're trying to emulate. So Jython 2.5 should be like CPython 2.5. Nowadays, I randomly grab pure Python, and most of the time it runs, and most of the time it works. It's the place where, and I say pure Python because if you have a bunch of C extensions or you're mucking around with a lot of C, it's just not going to work. It's sort of Java is our analogy to C. If you want to dig into some program that's written in another, anyway, we can run Java. CPython can run C. It doesn't really work the other way. We're working on something called C types, where we'll be able to run some C the way CPython runs dynamically loaded object files. We're probably going to be able to get to that maybe in the next year. But the regular C extensions, we may never be able to run those.
And so if you're lined up with 2.5, are you going to be also, I understand there's a Python 3000 movement now for the next generation Python. Are you looking at Jython tracking that?
We're most definitely interested in implementing a Jython 3000 or a Jython 3.0 in the future. There's no real work on that right now. I kind of threw together a parser last year sometime, and but there's enough differences that it's going to be a significant effort to not like Perl 6 was a significant effort.
Well, that's the new standard for how much you can make something incompatible with previous history. That's setting new standards in that, yes. I will accept that as a Perl representative, yes.
Sure, sure. So Python 3.0 is a much, much more modest movement than Perl 6. So it's just, in the end, most of it's just sloughing off things that are old and there are alternatives. And it's sort of like more like a big cleanup of the 2.x series it's more, to use a common phrase, it's more evolutionary than revolutionary. And so it shouldn't be that hard. A lot of it will just be deleting like old style classes in favor of the new style classes, new style being at least 10 years old now, so new doesn't even really apply that much anymore. But for example, but Jython's still carrying around, 2.x of any kind is still carrying around old style classes, and we get to delete that when we move to 3.0 and make a few other changes. But it'll be significant. It'll be an effort to get to 3.0. But we're dedicated to do it. We want to.
And the license is, I presume, it's under the same license as Python is?
Yes. Yes, it's the same license.
And that's, mostly like a BSD-style license?
It's closest to a BSD license. Unfortunately, it's got a bunch of junk in the file, because when it was first made, it's not as small and clean as a BSD license, but in the end the effect of it is a BSD license.
It just goes around the back end to try to get the same answer, huh?
Yeah, well, it's just got this strange it's got like this strange little stack of licenses, because it's got the original license that even says click here to accept and some stuff like that. And they're not allowed to get rid of it because it's baked in. It's legally bound to the Python for all eternity.
Can't change it now.
You can bind a click like really that on a paper document? Like, how does that work?
It's not legal in any way, but we do it. And so now we have to keep doing it because Richard Stallman says so.
So what's your development model? It's you said you have a team of 8 people that are committers. Do you have people making patch suggestions? Do you have people turning in bug reports? And how do you stay in touch with all those people?
Well, for the most part, we communicate by IRC and email, and we have a bug tracker where the people send patches and complaints. And that works pretty well for us. We also tend to meet up at each PyCon. A good portion of the core developers go to PyCon and show up at the sprints at the end, and we tend to have 2 or 3 days to work together once a year like that. And then that works well enough.
How do you prioritize the request for features?
Now you're Cyloning.
God, I hate that when that happens.
Yeah, we're going to plug it back in. It'll be all better in a second.
There we go. Okay. Better.
The editors are going to be busy on this show, I'll tell you.
That's, I mean, I have the headset that dies after an hour, but here Dane's going to take care of me next week.
We've got a new recommendation that we think works.
Dane's taking care of me next week, so next week we won't have this problem. Was I in the middle of asking a question, or was I answering something? I can't remember now.
I think I was answering, and I was just saying that the email IRC, that seems to work well enough, and other than that, we meet once a year at PyCon. I was going to say that my new job is in San Francisco, and within a few months I'm going to move out there. And there's three other core developers there, so there'll be four of us. Actually, one of them is also going to the same job that I'm going to in San Francisco. So at that point, there'll be four of us in one small area. So we'll probably do some collaborating like that once that happens.
Hey, how can you both have the same job? You mean both working for the same company?
No, both. Oh, that's true. That's true. Although I think we might have the same title and the same. Anyway, it's a very, very small company. It's just, I don't think there's even 10 employees yet. It's a company called Sauce Labs, and they picked us both up.
Okay, that's exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
You'll love it out here. It's great. I mean, I mean, Raleigh's fantastic too, but I think you'll really enjoy it.
Sauce Labs is something to do with Selenium, right?
Yeah, that's a Selenium company. They actually have Jason Huggins, the inventor of Selenium, there, and it's a company that's built around making Selenium use easier for everyone.
Do you want to describe what Selenium is for some of our audience who might not be familiar with it,
like me?
Sure, I'm sorry. Yeah, definitely. It's
I know it's an element, but I can't remember if it's is it a rare earth or is it a inert gas.
I believe it's rare earth.
Yes.
But anyway, it's it's for testing. It's for functional testing browser-based applications.
Cool.
And Sauce has their own version of it that you can use. And they also have you can use the Sauce servers to run your tests in parallel in a kind of a cloud computing kind of way. So that's kind of what they're doing there. And they're just, I really wanted to go there because they were just such smart guys when I interviewed there. It's just, you know, you want to surround yourself by people that are smarter than you if you want to become a better developer. And I think it's going to be the right place for that for me.
Well, it sounds like we should get them on a future show then. Well, maybe not. Well, maybe you again. That'd be kind of cool. We just have you back on again. You talk all about Selenium and Sauce. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
That's very cool.
Fantastic.
Have we covered everything you wanted to talk about Jython today, sir?
I think so.
And what kind of developers are you looking for, or other people to help out? You have translators, you developers. Who else can help you out with Jython?
Yeah, probably one of the best groups is Java developers who know something about Python, or Python developers that want to know something about Java.
But fourth programmers need not apply.
Well, no, if you're interested.
Or RAT4.
Right.
Yeah.
We definitely need more people to, there's lots and lots and lots to do. And particularly with the next version, whatever 2.x, whether we go for 2.6 or 2.7 or the Jython 3000, there's definitely lots of interesting work to be done.
Cool.
You know, anybody that's interested.
Okay. Well, there's the call for action there. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Appreciate you, plugging in at the last minute. I know we only rearranged this like a week ago. So thank you for filling in on the slot.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. That was fun.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Take care, Frank.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Jython.
Bye. Jython.
Yeah. I've Jython's been around since 97. I've always heard very good things about it. So it's great to talk to and know that they're in active development and all that, because Python is still in very active development.
Oh, yeah. It has to be.
Yeah. Oh, shut up.
To keep up with Perl 6.
Yeah, Perl 6. Any day now.
Any day now. It's amazing how many people you can employ on an infinite time scale project.
Where is really my mythical man month when I need it?
This is the ongoing attempt to suck all possible volunteer time out of the universe.
Where is Perl 6 these days? Is it is there a time frame?
We should get Larry on and have him explain it.
Yeah. Larry's great. I really admire Larry. And we were talking about Parrot. Is Parrot a key part of that development, or is it just part of, is just a side line?
The Pearl 6 on Parrot now has its own name. It's Rakuto, which is the sort of, you know, it means Pearl 6 on Parrot, but Pearl 6 is really trying to be designed so that it can be translated to many different platforms, just be Parrot.
Got it.
And the goal for that is that something, if you design Pearl 6 correctly, then Pearl 6 on the JVM should be relatively simple. Pearl 6 on .NET should be relatively simple. And so that's why there's this effort going in to really try to separate the Pearl 6, you know, translator at the top level from the Pearl 6 ASTs at the middle level down to the actual whatever it runs in at the bottom level. Right. In fact, there was actually a demonstration version of running Pearl 6 in Pearl 5 about 6 months ago.
Hmm.
So the Pearl 6 was being translated to Pearl 5 language statements. And it was a proof of concept. It never went too much further. And now the primary focus is Rakuto, which is just getting Pearl 6 as a stack from top to bottom, running Pearl 6 on top of Parrot. So that's the current emphasis. And there are releases of Rakuto happening about once every 6 weeks or so. But the spec is also still changing about 5 to 10 commits a day. So if a spec's still changing that fast, it's hard to think of how long it's going to take to still implement it. Right. I'm not betting on it happening by this summer's OSCON. It's maybe an alpha release by OSCON this year. So, which is back in Portland. Yay. It'll be so nice to have it back in town.
Yeah. You just roll out of bed and roll over to OSCON.
You know, I'm sometimes that lazy. It's true.
I don't blame you. Hey, I
like traveling. You know, hey, I spent last week in Daytona Beach. That was a lot of fun. But I'm happy to be home. I'm happy to, you know, have all the things that are familiar to me around here and be able to do this right stuff. Yeah.
I look forward to the day when CES is in Petaluma, because that's going to be great.
Right next to the milk and butter.
Yeah, Butter and Eggs Day Parade. It'll just be at the end of the, you know, boulevard right there.
Yep.
They can have it, you know, they can have it in the Moose Hall, actually. That's a great place for events.
Right next to the year-round Christmas store.
Yeah. You know Petaluma quite well, actually.
I was the Gizwiz. You talk about it every day on Gizwiz.
It's really taking shape, isn't it? In your mind, there is a Petaluma.
I know where the train
runs. It's kind of like Grover's Mills, really. It's a phantasmagorical town.
But it's not as fictional as Grover's Mills.
Mythical proportions. No, it is not. Everything we have said today is real and true and exists.
It's scarily true. It's almost as if it's a parody of itself.
And if CES keeps shrinking, they may have it in the Moose Hall. They may actually be able to do that.
Well, wait till you have the TWIT conference. You could have that. You could just
That's a good idea. Yeah. We've talked about that.
You take all your topics and you put them together. You could fill a convention hall there in Petaluma. Of course, that'd be 10 people, but...
You know the gnome. How big is Gnomedex? That's hundreds of people go to Gnomedex every year.
Yeah,
we could do that.
We had a successful Smalltalk conference with only about 150 people 2 years ago.
That's a perfect number. You don't want you don't want a giant thing.
Yeah.
Now, how many people you think will be on Mac Mini 11? I'm very excited about this. Captain Neil has announced Mac Mini 11. I'm gonna give him a plug. He didn't ask for a plug, but I'm gonna give him a plug because I'm going.
Yeah.
Insight Cruises does all these great cruises, and Randall goes on every one of them, the Scientific American cruises. You just came back from one of those. Once a year, they do a Macintosh cruise. Mac Mania 10 is coming up in May?
Yeah,
June.
Late May.
And that's to Bermuda. I am not going to be on that one. I'm afraid I can't because my daughter's graduating from high school around about that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should stick around for that. I don't know. Call me old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. However, the next year... Mac Mania 11 in 2011, February 4th through 12th, I think, or 16th. No, through 16th, because Valentine's Day is included. I am so excited. This is so exciting. We're going to South America. We're going to Antarctica, a very special Mac Mania excursion. We start in Buenos Aires, the Paris of South America. We go through Cape Horn, the Mariner's Delight. and land in Santiago, Chile. Along the way, we will see the Falkland Islands, much of Argentina and Chile. And as I said, a special excursion to Antarctica. Plus, you'll become a Cap Hornista, somebody who has crossed through the straits, the very treacherous straits of Cape Horn. It's on the MS Vindom, which is one of the best Holland America ships, a relatively small ship on the line. Mm-hmm. It's best service, best crew, And what a wonderful bunch, these Mac Mania cruises. You get to hang out with Mac folks. I just love them. And this is going to be my seventh continent when I set foot in Antarctica. I'm so excited.
And not only mention that, though, because it's a longer cruise, a 12-day cruise, there are six sea days.
Yeah.
That means there's going to be a lot of content. So if you were sort of going, well, you know, the shorter 7-day cruises only have maybe 2.5 days of content. This is 6 days of content that we're going to have to fill with speakers like yourself, like me.
Well, I'm going to do my 60 iPhone apps in 60 seconds updated. I'm going to do my 60, I have 60 Mac gems, I think I do.
Wait, not 60 iPhone apps in 60 seconds.
60 minutes. Did I say
60?
It's a very quick talk. Very quick talk. I'm going to do my social media talk, which was a real hit last time. We were thinking the home theater PC thing, but I think by then that will not make a lot of sense. Apple will have finally come up with something. So maybe TBD on the fourth one. But I have some other things. We'll probably do the Genius Bar again, and I want to do a trivia contest with some great prizes. Anyway, we're going to have a lot of fun. Fake Steve Jobs is confirmed, but there's others on the list, some very, very exciting people on the list that have not yet confirmed because of scheduling. You know, this is a year and a half out, so they've got to make sure they can do it. But not even that long, 14 months out. I am really excited. So go to Insight Cruises. Book now. If you think you're going to go, book now. The deposit's not very much because you do want to get on that Antarctic excursion. That is going to, for me, I am so excited. And by the way, we will see the very famous Antarctic penguin reserves where the Gentoo penguin lives. Okay? If you're a Linux fan, you got to go.
Indeed. Even if you're a Mac and Linux fan, both.
We will search for Tux. That very rare penguin with the orange feet and the orange bill. Never before been seen, but perhaps we will find him.
Maybe he'll be next to a beastie and a camel and a snake.
Ooh!
That would be really cool to have, like, the whole
O'Reilly,
menagerie.
The O'Reilly cruise. I just want
all the icons.
It's very early, I know. It's 14 months off. But I just want, and you know, there's still space on Mac Mania 10, so book both.
Yeah. These are insightcruises.com. So and if you go to the front page, it has links for all these cruises. So check those out.
So much fun.
That page, by the way, is hosted at Amazon EC2. We just moved it over a couple months ago.
Oh, did you? Is it running on Solaris?
Yeah. It's running Open Solaris right now. If you go there right now, it's running Open Solaris, running on EC2. It's been there for a couple of months, and we're happy with it. We're terribly happy with it.
Well, in that case, everybody go there now because there's no way we could bring it down, right? We can't. There's no way the Twit effect could take it down.
That would be an interesting test. I actually haven't done I have done some beating it up with AB.
Popped up very, very quickly. Everybody go to insightcruises.com right now.
Hit reload a few times.
Reload. I mean, it's popping up. Look how fast this is. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Well,
I spoke it's laboring. You broke Amazon.
Oh, great.
They can't break Amazon.
No, I think it's probably because I have a bandwidth limit coming out or something. Let's see here.
It's coming. It's just very slow.
Neil's going to hate me if I just broke this site.
No, you didn't break it.
I told people to break it. No, same thing. I take responsibility.
It's still working.
Really fast, though.
Look, there's Mac Mania 11. Oh, this is going to be so cool.
I'm running top on the machine right now to see what's happening. Yeah, the web's we're hitting the max limit.
It's slow.
I have the number of web servers limited to make sure that over CPU the machine when it gets that bad. I mean, the load average is only 0.13 still. So we're doing fine.
Bright Horizons, is that the Scientific American ones? Yeah.
Yeah.
Chess Moves 4 is coming up January 2011. That's a great one. I wanted it on.
New Chess Cruise. Yeah, we just added that recently.
So I was on Chess Moves 2. It was incredible.
Yeah. We got Grandmasters and stuff on
there. They've got a Galapagos.
It's been a fun gig for me. I mean, people have said over the years, well, why are you going on the ones that aren't really related to what you do? And I go, no, it's still a cruise. And I still have a lot of fun. I still connect and network with really great people. And I learn a lot. I mean, a lot of the reason why I'm doing the photographs that I'm doing is because I've gone on some of the photo cruises.
Right. Oh, man, me too. It's really been great for my photography. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, check them out. It's part of my job. I'm wearing multiple hats here.
Well, I don't mind giving them a plug. And I'm going to be on this one. Buenos Aires, Montevideo, we're going to see Uruguay, Port Stanley and the Falkland Islands, still a British colony despite every attempt to steal it away. Mm-hmm. Ushuaia, Argentina, where we'll see the Francia and Italia glaciers and the Coburn and Beagle channels. Punta Arenas, Chile and the Strait of Magellan, that's where we're going to fly to Antarctica from there. So February 11th, you'll be going to Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
Canal Sarmiento, Chilean fjords, Puerto Montt, Chile. And then finally, Santiago, Chile, Valparaiso. Mm-hmm. I am so excited. I mean, you couldn't. I think you couldn't find a more interesting itinerary than that. That's going to be
this will be fun.
Look at
absolutely
the fjords.
Fun.
Look at those fjords. That's so cool.
Pining for the fjords.
Pining for the fjords. So who's coming up on the lovely Floss Weekly?
Well, you know, we just booked a couple of really interesting people. Actually, people have been trying to get on the show for a while, and we finally got them slotted in. Next week is a mystery guest. We're taping this 8 days ahead. Next week's taping is the next to last day of the year. And Leo, if you're up for this, maybe if I don't get anybody, do you want to just chat about the state of open source and licensing and issues?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll have a show either way.
It is kind of, you know, it's a tough time to book people in. I mean, it's the week that everybody's doing something else.
So maybe I'll send you a couple of topics to think about, and we can have a conversation, conversation about that.
I'm
hoping to get a guest. So there may be, it's the mystery guest right now. The week after, though, a very interesting person. I've been chatting with her for a while. She goes online by the name of FreeBSD Girl. She's a FreeBSD expert, advocate for FreeBSD. Her real name is Randy Harper. And she's agreed to come on the show in a couple of different aspects. She, of course, is going to pitch FreeBSD, talk about what it's all about and so on, which we haven't had a representative on.
No, I'm excited about that.
So she's on the marketing team for that. So she understands that. That's what she does, and she promotes it online. If you go to freebsdgirl.org and stuff, she has blogs about FreeBSD and talks all about that. But she also is an outspoken person about women in open source. So, of course, we always like to get that aspect of it on our show. We've had a couple of guests in the past that have talked a little bit about that. But she has an interesting take on it. So I wanted to bring her on the show to kind of give her sort of point of view about it. And it might be a bit controversial, so it'll be fun. I want to make sure that she gets on and gets her piece spoken about that. Coming up immediately after that, actually maybe 2 weeks after that, we have, next week after that, we have just booked him, Michael DeRolf, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, is going to talk about MongoDB. Now, MongoDB is one of these alternative databases. Now, we just had the ExistDB guys on a couple weeks ago talking about XML-based database, but this is that sort of key-value pair kind of database like we did with CouchDB a couple of years ago. So it's great for having huge data stores where you're trying to map data together and you don't want to have to come up with a schema and you don't want to have to write SQL to get at it. It's a pretty amazing project. So I'm very happy to have him coming on, especially at short notice, because I wanted to make sure we had some shows in January already booked. And also immediately following that, we have Perry McDowell, who has been involved since the beginning, I believe, with Delta 3D, which is an open source gaming engine. In other words, it understands physics and graphics and draws them. Well, I know we had somebody on about a year ago that was something like this, but he actually recommended we talk to the Delta 3D guys. So we got Perry talking about that. That's going to be really fun. And a lot of people on the short list, go to twit.tv/floss. There's a link from there to the upcoming shows. If you want to watch people, I'm trying to get on the slot there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Merlin on Twitter, Merlin with a Y. And one reason to do that is I also am now frequently live streaming with my finally official Ustream iPhone application. So you can see me driving down the road or walking through a store or something like that. If you're really into voyeurism, please follow my Twitter feed so you can see what I'm doing that. In particular, I also live stream my karaoke as often as I can. I do karaoke one or two nights a week. And I'm, if you're watching this live, I am going to be live streaming tonight with my mom. She's going to watch me sing. She's going to watch me sing for the first time. She's never watched me do karaoke. So
this you know, the amazing thing is his mom actually does sound like Kermit the Frog. So it's kind of, believe it or not, every time he sings Rainbows, it's the Rainbow Connection. It's an homage.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And actually, on her behalf, I'm actually dedicating singing the song If I Were a Rich Man from which apparently I have exactly the right voice range and even a bit of the accent.
If I were a rich man.
Russian. There we go, right.
I think you'd be better singing Sunrise, Sunset.
I may do that one too, but I'll start with the one I can do.
Randall Tevye Schwartz.
Exactly.
Making his mother proud.
Could you have been offering me maybe only a couple of dollars? Right. So anyway, it'll be fun.
I love it. I'm looking forward to it. Some great shows. And, I'll interview you next week if we don't have a guest. Because, I mean, you've got a lot to say. We don't really get to talk to you about Perl and about Seascape or Seaside.
You talk a little bit to me by each time, but people would have to clip it together,
exactly.
Like over 100 shows to figure out.
I'd like to know what the state of your thinking is these days about languages, web programming, that kind of thing. So, you'd be a great guest for Floss Weekly. Someday we ought to book you on.
Well, we did for show number 9. That's how I got started.
Another thing we could do, Randall, and they're suggesting this in the chat room, and it's absolutely true, is we could also open the lines to our audience and give them a chance to ask you questions as well.
Yeah,
so
that'd
we do have this great talk-in technology now, which really makes it easy to take calls.
So we will definitely have a show next week. It may not have a guest other than the mystery guest, which hasn't quite been
booked. Or you.
Yet. Or me.
You, the listener, and Randall, the host.
We will have a show then, for sure.
Mr. Schwartz, thank you so much. Have a great interview today. Have a wonderful week. Happy New Year.
Yep.
And we'll see you in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a
or
minute.
10. Or 2010.
Wait a minute.
What, to get a year off?
I'm all ready to go to South America. We'll see you in 2010. The year we make contact. Not. See you later, Randall.